Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences, itineraries and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
Support for WPR comes from Rutabaga Paddle Sports, offering kayaks, canoes, and outdoor equipment for anyone wanting to experience the natural beauty of Wisconsin water. 2620 Rimrock Road in Madison or RutabagaShop.com.
Even if you have just a small patch of garden space or maybe even just a room for a few pots on a patio or a balcony, I'm betting you plant some vegetables every year, and it can be really satisfying to plant seeds or plants and tend to them. And if you end up with some succulent tomatoes or delicious salad greens, all the better. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My guest today, John Hendrickson, comes by at least once a year. He is with the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems in the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at UW-Madison, and he's the outreach specialist for fresh market vegetables and food systems. He also coordinates the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. John, thanks for spending time with us today. Really appreciate it.
Great to be here, Larry.
I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. We'll be zeroing in a bit, I believe, on vegetables today. But if you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you. Now that we're well into winter, you know, spring seems a long way off right now, but I think dreaming about it a little bit can help us get through. What are some of your favorite vegetable varieties that you like to think about?
Well, first, on the topic of winter, Larry, the one really good news is that we're just about at solstice.
Yes.
And so that means that the days are going to be getting longer, more daylight.
Yes.
I don't mind the cold and snow so much, but I get a little tired of the short day length. So I really look forward to solstice, and that to me is the signal that spring is coming. And I really enjoy the winter season for planning and thinking about, you know, going through the seed catalogs. I don't know, I probably said this every year when you've asked me that question, Larry, but one of my favorite things to grow is carrots.
Yes.
A lot of people talk about the fact that a homegrown tomato is just so much better than the supermarket tomato. I think, you know, to me, carrots are even more so, but maybe it's the second most taste difference between store-bought and a good carrot that comes out of the ground here in Wisconsin. So I like to grow those, and there's so many different varieties, and now they're coming out with the different color carrots, and
it's fun really to experiment. Great. I was talking to an organic farmer from out east, from New York, as a matter of fact, and he. One of the things he raised as a market gardener, in part, was the carrots. And he said that kids were trading at school, trying to trade to get the carrots. The kids that brought his carrots were so good that they would try to trade their sandwiches off or other things.
I have to say that my boys have come home with the exact same story, Larry, that their kids, their friends...
Try to get
the carrots from my boys at school.
No kidding. Doesn't that make you feel great?
Oh, it's great. And I've been able to sell to some school districts as well for their snack programs and whatnot. And the kids are crazy for a fresh, really good carrot.
Oh, and you're right. I mean, the taste of a well-grown carrot, fresh,
right,
is unbelievable. Well, you know, Irma in Glendale has a question for you. Let's just go there. Hi, Irma. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I am concerned about my Brussels sprouts. This is the first year I could not harvest them for Thanksgiving dinner, and I was just wondering if anybody else had trouble.
So what was the problem with them, Irma? They weren't ready, or?
They didn't develop. They never developed.
Well, they do take a long season. Did you get them in the normal time that you did in the spring?
Yeah.
We also had you're from Glendale. I'm not actually sure exactly where that is, but I know what large portions of Wisconsin experienced a drought, and so it could have been some issues there. Do you have Do you have access to irrigation and to water your garden?
Yes.
Hmm. You never know. If you missed a week, or you know, if you know, if they didn't get water, or there were some kind of off weather, too hot, I think is a problem too, isn't it, John?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a long season. I guess another thought that comes to mind is that if you've been gardening in the same location for a really long time, you could maybe have some fertility issues, and so you could do a soil test and send that into to the UW Soil Test Lab and see if you're missing some nutrients.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Would you call that succession planting, or is that something different? One technique I think I've heard about is succession planting.
Well, sure, succession planting is planting things regularly on kind of a set cycle, and that's one thing that I think some kind of beginning gardeners don't think about. They kind of put their garden in on a set time at the beginning of the season, maybe in May. And then that's, you know, they plant that one time, and then they, you know, ride out the season and harvest as things happen. A market garden or a commercial farm in Wisconsin that's growing vegetables is going to be planting every week from, you know, the beginning to the end, just about.
Oh, okay.
In order to have a succession of crops. For example, we were just talking about the carrots. Spring carrot crop is planted early, but then for the fall crop, we're planting carrots in July.
Okay. Are there other what other vegetables might that work with?
Well, there's a lot of cool season crops where you have two seasons for them, a spring season for broccoli, cabbage, lettuce, spinach, those kinds of things. And then in the heat of the summer, they don't grow so well, but then you can plant a later planting, say in July or for some things as late as August, and have another crop in the fall. Now, that doesn't really relate to Brussels sprouts, because Brussels sprouts are such a long season crop. You need to get those in early. One thing the individual that called could try is planting not all her plants at once,
mm-hmm.
and planting at a few different times, and maybe one of those plantings will come through, whereas the others might not.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Irma, thanks for calling.
I did learn something.
Yeah.
I had such beautiful plants, and I kept thinking, can't those leaves be used or something? So we looked it up on the internet, and you can use the Brussels sprout leaves for like stir fry and
oh,
so
sure. Any of those brassica family plants are perfectly edible. You know, I mean, you can eat leaves off of broccoli as well.
I hadn't thought about Brussels. I love Brussels sprouts. Mm. I'm the only one in the family who does, but I love them. But I had never thought about using the leaves. So,
well, they're good.
They're good stir fry.
Use them like collard green.
Yeah. Thanks, Irma.
Well, you can steam them. You can stir fry them. They're just delicious.
I'm going to remember that. I'm going to try that. Thanks, Irma.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Barb in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Barb.
Thank you for the wonderful program. Thinking of all these things in the winter is great. I, too, like to grow carrots, but for some reason, the carrots I had this year didn't have a lot of flavor like they usually have. They weren't as sweet and good. And I was wondering if you recommend a certain type of carrot or a brand name of carrot.
Hmm. What carrots do you like?
Yeah,
to
that's
raise?
A good question. Was it mainly a taste issue or a sweetness issue or a little
sweetness.
Of both?
Sweetness.
I thought I had sweeter ones before, but then I couldn't remember what I had bought.
Mm.
And
well, one of the keys to a sweet carrot is that a carrot needs to be, the soil needs to be moist basically the entire time.
Mm.
And so it does not, you know, if the ground dries out, the carrots are going to get more bitter. And so you have to do a lot of watering.
Okay.
You know, that's actually, you know, in order to get carrots to germinate, you've got to supply a lot of water, and then all through their production, you need to have nice, consistent water, and that's proven to be fairly, you know, foolproof for my carrots, and that I think is, you know, perhaps even more important than the particular variety. I do have some varieties that I like to grow. One is called Mokum, M-O-K-U-M. that is a slender carrot that I grow as baby carrots because I sell to restaurants and chefs, and they like those slender baby carrots. That's a very sweet, tender carrot. Another one that I really like is a variety called Hercules, which is named because it has broad shoulders at the top. It's a tapered carrot. But there's a lot of different ones. Bolero is a real popular one among market farms in Wisconsin. It's grown really widely. But there's a lot of really good ones.
Okay, well, wonderful. Thank you. Because I agree with you. I think one of the reasons our children and grandchildren, for me now, don't want to eat vegetables is they have no taste from the store.
Yeah.
And from the garden, they're just so much better that they actually like them.
Yeah. I think you're right, Barb.
I would agree.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way. Give us a call with your questions or comments, or maybe you've got an experience to share in your vegetable garden. Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page. Go to the... excuse me, I lost my voice a second there. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post your questions or comments there. Deb in Plymouth said she thought her husband's carrots tasted bitter, and it's, again, the watering issue.
That would be my primary issue that I would identify is the water issue. And, you know, related to that is the timing of the planting. You know, carrots are going to do better planted really early and harvested in late June or July for the early crop, or planted in July and harvested late. The later you harvest, the better, because as the weather gets cold in the fall, the starches turn to sugars in just about any root. You know, it's the same for parsnips or anything else. They get sweeter when you harvest when it's cold. So you kind of have to wait and get out there on a cold day to dig your carrots.
But that's but then they really taste good.
That's right. And, you know, it's the same with spinach too. I mean, spinach.
Yeah.
It's incredible after a frost.
Yeah, absolutely. When you talk about a lot of water, what are you do you
Well,
how,
I
how do you
I,
do?
I guess
do
I I, should, I guess I should I guess I shouldn't say just a lot of water, because that's not very helpful. It's more a matter of consistent water.
Okay.
You really want to avoid those them drying out for extended periods of time. You know, and a general rule of thumb is most vegetable crops like an inch of water a week. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, nature doesn't usually provide exactly an inch of water a week, so that usually means that you're giving some water supplementally.
And how do you keep track of that inch of water a week?
Well, you can buy a simple rain gauge to keep track at your garden. Increasingly, you can get really detailed weather reports online at any of the weather sites. But there's nothing like having a weather gauge or a rain gauge on your property to determine how much is actually falling.
I think a squirrel knocked mine over and broke it this past year, which was kind of maddening. Darn squirrel.
Yeah, I had that happen too. So I didn't notice at first that I had a hairline crack in the water gauge. And so my rain gauge was not telling me the truth.
You and I have very similar experiences. Let's go to Chris in Watertown. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
Morning.
I've always wondered, how do they grow that little tiny corn you get in the Oriental dishes? I just love it, but I don't have a tiny combine to harvest it. I'm wondering.
Yeah, they're like 2 inches long, maybe, or an inch and a half. And
boy, there's a question that I'm familiar with it, having eaten at restaurants before, but I do not know about the production of those tiny little ears of corn. Although I take that back. I think they may use popcorn varieties for that type of corn. Now, that could be wrong. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I'm out on a limb here because that's beyond my experience.
Chris, you stay listening, because somebody, we got all these master gardeners out here. Somebody's going to know. And now you've got my interest peaked too. We got to find this out.
And I think the reason that those popcorn varieties are preferred is because a popcorn corn plant tends to produce more ears.
Yeah.
Than, say, a field corn variety or even a sweet corn variety.
Well, now that I think about what they look like more like a popcorn variety of the small ones look more like the bigger version of a the smaller version of a big popcorn. Well, stay listening, Chris, because we're going to get some answers on that, I'm sure.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. John Hendrickson, our guest today, with the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems, outreach specialist for fresh market vegetables and food systems, and he coordinates the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. We'll certainly talk about that school and, of course, answer questions about the school or about your vegetables in your garden. I'd love to hear your own experiences as well. I'm Larry Mueller. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Having some fun on this cold winter day on Garden Talk, talking about garden vegetables with John Hendrickson of the Center for Integrated Ag Systems. Great to have him along. Thank you so much for listening in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. And the dates for the School for Beginning Market Growers, you got January 10th through the 12th. And maybe you could tell us just a bit about what goes on with that event.
Sure. It's a three-day intensive program designed to expose people to what they need to learn and the skills they need to have to start a successful business growing and selling vegetables. So we have a strong focus on direct marketing, farmers markets, community-supported agriculture, also selling to restaurants and things like that. And we have three experienced growers that we invite to do the majority of the teaching in addition to some guests from the university, specialists from the university.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you're out there, and you live it yourself.
It is true. I have a 9-month appointment at the university, and I try to eke out enough time in the summertime to run my own farm.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's a great combination. Daryl in Merrimack has a question for you. Hi, Daryl.
Yes. Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I've had a problem with my tomatoes in the last couple of years. They develop. The plant grows very vigorously. Gets good bush. And the tomatoes get large, but they just don't ripen.
You know, we had that this year in particular, John. I a lot of people talked about that, and I'm personal experience as well. It seemed to me that my tomatoes were late ripening, and as a matter of fact, here I'm going to brag once more. This is the last week. I still have about 6 tomatoes. Small ones left from my garden. I ate one yesterday, a cherry tomato that was green and has. I had a whole pile of them, and they're ripening, and now I'm down to about the last half dozen.
And how do they taste?
They don't taste as good as they did by any means, but they're still tomatoes, and I can still brag about it.
That's great. Yeah, you can harvest things green. Did you leave them on the vine, or did you harvest and,
no,
and they've just been sitting around?
Just been sitting on the in the kitchen.
Because I know some people will harvest the whole, you know, the whole vine and hang those and,
no, didn't do that.
And wait for them to ripen as well. You know, I've experienced the slow ripening tomatoes. That happened to me this summer as well. You know, we didn't have a tremendously warm summer this year. It got hot for a little while, and so that was certainly an impact. But it's really kind of a matter of patience. Sometimes, you know, when a full-grown tomato plant is doing a lot of things in the peak of the summer, it's still growing, it's producing leaves, it's got the fruit. One thing that you can do, it might be hard to do, if you're really frustrated with your tomato plant not ripening up or the tomatoes not ripening up, is to remove some of that green fruit so it's not dealing with so much. And if you take some of that green fruit off, the remaining fruit will ripen more quickly.
Yeah, that's a.
Well, I was.
Yeah, go ahead, Daryl.
I was wondering if it wasn't getting enough light in on the fruit, because I mean the bush was just would be huge,
you could possibly have a situation where you've got too much nitrogen in your soil, where it's growing a lot of vegetation, which is what nitrogen does to the plant. Basically, is it promotes the development of the vines and the leaves. So you might want to, I made the suggestion to another caller, to get a soil test and see what you've got going on in the soil and see if your nitrogen levels might be a little bit high.
Yeah. And maybe then you wouldn't add any or have do any for, although white tomatoes use a little, they use some nitrogen.
Oh, yeah, they certainly need it.
Yeah, they need
but
it.
But if it's excessive, it's just going to grow in terms of the vines and not put as much energy into fruit production.
Yep, there we go. Thanks, Daryl. And Scott in Eau Claire, hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Great.
I got just a couple questions. First, you guys were talking about carrots, and it triggered something. Me and my wife were talking about, my kids don't really care for carrots, but if we get the yellow carrots, then they'll eat them. So we like to get the yellow carrots when we can, and when I cut them up and then put them in a steamer to steam them in the microwave, they spark, and then they get little char marks on them. I don't experience it with, regular orange carrots, but it doesn't seem to matter. It happened with yellow carrots that we got from the farmer's market and yellow carrots that we bought, prepackaged store frozen bought. And then also I'm thinking about starting a garden in the corner of my backyard, maybe like 15 by 15 or so, and just kind of wondering, is it best to build it up with some treated like 2x10s or 2x12s and haul dirt in, or just take all the grass, the turf out and just plant level on the ground, if it's better to do raised or just to till it, move the grass and then till it and plant over that, and then I will take it off the air. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Well, we got a few questions there. The yellow carrots sparking in the microwave would be a mystery to me.
Mineral content. The content of the makeup of the carrot, there's probably something in there that's...
But he was saying that it was happening with yellow carrots that they got from different sources.
That's what I mean. That's why there must be something in the genetic makeup of that carrot that has some sort of... some mineral that's going to create a spark.
Huh.
It'd be like a metal, piece of metal that you put in a microwave.
I was surprised to hear that question or the comment that the kids wanted the odd colored carrots. I call them odd colored carrots because we think of carrots as being orange. In my experience, none of the colored carrots to date taste as good as the orange carrots, and that's of course because orange carrots have been bred and improved for many, many, many years, whereas the other colors have been neglected and are only recently coming into fashion, so to speak. And so the carrot breeders haven't developed and improved those varieties to the extent that the orange carrots have. I grow some of those colored carrots. We don't eat any of them at home. I sell those, but I don't eat any of them because I don't think they taste as good as the orange ones.
So what are your thoughts about a small garden plot in the corner?
Yeah, well, it kind of becomes a matter of time, materials, and your own interests and physical situation. Raised beds are a wonderful way to garden because you can add lots of material. Organic matter, compost, what have you. You can get the plants up a little bit, which might make it easier to work in the garden. You've got better drainage if you've got heavy rains with a raised bed. But certainly having a flat garden can yield perfectly good results as well.
Yeah, I was my ears perked up a little bit when he said treated wood.
I would not recommend using treated wood in a garden where you're going to be growing things for human consumption.
And there are some I'm suddenly blanking on the name of the layering lasagna gardening. You might just take a look, go online and type in lasagna gardening. It sounds to me like you've got a spot where that might really work. It's kind of a smaller area. I mean, it obviously works on a large area too, but it might be fun. And I've had so many people rave about the success they've had with lasagna gardening. And so You might want to go on a lasagna just like the lasagna you eat. Lasagna gardening. Look that up. Now you're laughing at me, John. Would you ever do that yourself?
Well, on the scale that I produce vegetables, no, because it just would be impractical, given that I have a couple acres of vegetables. But lasagna gardening is kind of a really popular technique right now, where you're essentially building kind of a compost pile, you know, with layered materials, so that you've got material that's composting and providing nutrients for your plants. Right there in the garden.
Yeah, and it's people have really liked it. And the other, I experimented with the straw bale gardening just for fun with mm-hmm. one straw bale mm-hmm. and three tomato plants on it. And those, frankly, the tomatoes that I'm eating now came from that straw bale. That was a lot of fun. I mean, we had some other things growing out the sides of the bale and the tomatoes growing up the top, and it was just a lot of fun to fool around with.
And you should post some pictures of that.
I have got some posted on my Facebook page. Okay. Yeah, you should go back and take a look. Eunice in Frederick, Wisconsin, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yes, hello.
I
was curious. I've been getting some carrots from the farmer's market with the purple skins.
Yep.
And they don't seem to have the same consistency as the ones with the orange skin.
Yeah.
And I wonder why and if it's good. I mean, can you give me some information?
Sure.
Well, those carrots with different colors do have different compounds in them to yield those different colors. Anthocyanins, I believe, is how you pronounce the red pigment color. And so those do impart a different flavor, and it's part of the reason why those colored carrots have a different flavor than the orange carrots.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's certainly health benefits to them as well. So
the purple ones have health.
If you don't mind the taste.
The health benefits are there.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So can you plant those?
Can you plant them yourself?
Oh, sure. You can get, it's not going to be the carrot variety that you're liable to see on the rack at your local hardware store necessarily. But you can certainly buy carrot seed for yellow, red, orange, white, mm-hmm. you name it. You can do a search online
mm-hmm.
For colored carrots.
I wonder if somebody like Jung's has carries them.
They may. Because it's gotten, quite popular, especially as, people buy them at the farmer's market, then people mm-hmm. want to try them at home, and so more and more companies are carrying them.
Yeah. Worth a look anyway, Eunice.
Yes, thank you so much. But you think that there's some benefit then from, anytime you get darker colors, while you get mm-hmm. more benefit from the nutrients.
That's right. And, eating the red and orange,
mm-hmm.
all those colors, the winter squash and all those things.
Really good for you.
Yep. But don't forget the greens, too.
No.
Well, that reminds me of my kale. It's gotten all covered with snow. I've got to get it undone. I learned a long time ago that you can just pick kale all year round out of the garden and use it. And that's,
yeah, if you've got the right varieties growing out there, you can still snap those frozen kale leaves off and still use them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thanks,
good.
Eunice.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. You can join in, too, by the way. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. That's the number to call as we visit with John Hendrickson of the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems, talking about the vegetable garden. Gene in Ironwood, Michigan. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. I love to fish, and I love to garden. And what I've been doing for the last few years, after I come home from fishing and I clean my fish after I take the fillets off. I take the rest of the fish and I bury it in between the rows in the garden. And am I doing myself a favor or am I hurting the garden?
Well, people have been using that kind of material in gardens for
forever.
And so that's certainly not a problem. I guess the one thing that I would say is that you should periodically soil test to make sure that you're not getting things out of balance, that those fish guts is going to have a lot of nitrogen mm-hmm. in it. And so you could, over time, be overloading your garden with that. So I would definitely advocate soil testing, not necessarily every year, but perhaps on a semi-annual basis.
Yeah.
Okay. And for the questions you had about somebody having a lot of green tomatoes, one way to use those green tomatoes up is fried green tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
It's a southern delicacy, which I got used to when I lived in Indiana. And they're absolutely great, and it's a good way to use up your green tomatoes.
Good point. And you can make jam out of them, too.
Yeah, chutney, salsa, you can use them up.
Thanks, Gene. Appreciate the call. Yeah, why not fish? I mean, that as I recall my grade school days, remembering the pilgrims and with the natives, and the natives always planted fish with their corn and so forth.
That's
and,
right, with the three sisters.
Yeah, there we go.
There was the fourth sister that was under the ground.
Somebody wondered if you could talk about the best way to overwinter carrots. You overwinter any?
Overwintering in terms of keeping them in the ground through the wintertime.
Yeah.
I tried that one time and just basically ended up with carrots that were nibbled on by rodents underneath the mulch that I had used to to try to keep those carrots going through the winter. So I harvest mine and keep them in storage.
And how do you store them once you harvest them?
Well, I have a walk-in cooler, and so when I'm harvesting them, say, September, October, and even into November this year, they were going to the walk-in cooler, and of course the walk-in cooler was running. Now, the walk-in, it's a matter of keeping the walk-in cooler from freezing rather than having the walk-in cooler run, especially since my walk-in cooler is in an unheated outbuilding. But the great thing about carrots is that carrots have a really high respiration rate, and so they actually help keep themselves warm. And so while my carrot is chock full of carrots and other roots, it actually does a fairly good job of moderating the temperature in there. And because the room is insulated, it stays between about 35, 40 degrees in there. It helps to, I sometimes run the fan in there to help, it generates a little bit of heat. And then I have a little milk house cooler in there just to make sure that it doesn't get below freezing and I don't ruin all my
Don't want to do that.
So my experience with overwintering carrots in the ground was not positive. I know it can be done, but I don't know what you do about the rodents.
There we go. Nick in Greenfield. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi, thank you. I tuned in late, so I might have missed this question, and I apologize if I did. And John, I was in the hospital for a good part of summer last summer, and so the weeds kind of took over. We got two little 6x6 garden plots, and I like to put in vegetables, usually tomatoes and hot peppers. And my wife tried to broccoli and cauliflower. And anyways, getting to the point, the weeds kind of took over around the vegetables last year because I just didn't get a chance to get out there and get at them. So my question is this. When I want to, after the snow goes, I want to rototill those two spots. Do I have to try and dig those weeds out, or do I just rototill them right under?
Well, I guess I can't answer without seeing the situation. If you've got a lot of long, leftover weed material, it might be difficult to rototill that in. If you've got long, sinewy weed residue, it can wrap around your rototiller tines. So
no,
if it was a real bad situation, I would recommend going in there and removing and mowing and clearing that off before you rototilled.
No, it wasn't long stuff at all. It was the short, stubby things with leaves on them, and I think the tallest one maybe was 4 inches.
Oh, okay.
And, they were like individual plants.
Yeah. Okay.
There's nothing wrong with tilling in some weed residue. I think anybody that's farmed or gardened has done a little bit of that over the years. One thing, some recommendations for you is to get out early. There's nothing like doing an early hand pulling of that first flush of weeds. And if you hand pull that first flush of weeds and don't disturb the soil and bring more weed seeds up to the surface where they can germinate, you actually can get, you can buy yourself or save yourself some time down the line in terms of weeding work.
Okay.
But you know, if you do a lot of aggressive weeding with your rototiller, or you know, really aggressive weeding with a hoe, you're just going to be back out there and again because you're bringing up weed seeds.
Okay. And do you have a website? Because I want to find out what vegetables grow in a more shady spot than sunny.
Okay.
I think partly sunny would be the description of it. It does get some sun in the afternoon, but it gets quite a bit of shade during the day. And I'd like to find out what to grow in that kind of situation.
Yeah, well, generally crops that are more cool season crops and crops where you're not going to be harvesting and eating the fruit tend to do better in lower light situations.
So,
and you got a website?
So I don't have a website that has that information in specifics, but I'm sure you could.
Yeah,
I'm sure you could find.
Yeah, the UW Extension. If you go to the University of Wisconsin Extension Learning Store. Is the place, the online place that is the repository for all of our Extension publications. And you can go online, you can go to that store, and there's a publication, there are a couple of publications that relate to growing vegetables and flowers and so forth under varying light conditions.
Oh, okay.
So go there and go, and you know, it's pretty easy. Once you get there, it'll direct you to vegetables and so forth and so on, and you'll get your recommendations there.
And you can get that online.
Online, go to the University of Wisconsin Learning Store. I actually think on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, we've got a link to it. But if you put UW Extension or University of Wisconsin Extension Learning Store, it's going to pop up.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and Larry, happy holidays, and John, thank you for all your input. Appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it, and thanks, and right back at you, Nick. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call, and happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you. Steve in Oshkosh, it's your turn. Hi, Steve.
Oh, hello. Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, this is the second winter I'm trying to grow indoor vegetables here. And I'm doing it, and you know it's I've been online reading about lighting. I got grow lights and everything, and I just wondered if your guests there had any general suggestions for indoor vegetable growing. I've listened to your program. You know, I've done hay bales. I got them trying cold frames now. You know, this winter that's not working too well. But anyways, just any general ideas for indoor winter growing vegetables indoors?
No.
Well, if you've done your research and invested in the lights, you may have more knowledge about it than I do. I tried to do a little bit of that back when I lived in Madison in an apartment and didn't have access to garden space. My results were not that positive. It requires, as I'm sure you know, a lot of light because, you know, the grow lights are not the same as the sun. And that, actually, you know, is a bigger factor than temperature is the length of time that they're accumulating light. There's a lot of growers that are starting to do more winter production in terms of a commercial scale. What's typically done is things are grown in an unheated hoop house. Mm-hmm. And although there's a certain amount of growing that does take place in the wintertime, I kind of liken the winter hoop house production as just kind of being an alternative to what I described earlier with my walk-in cooler. Because of the day length being short and the temperatures being cool, the vegetables that are being grown in the hoop house are not doing a tremendous amount of growing.
Hmm.
You basically grow them in the fall,
yeah,
and then you're using that hoop house structure as a storage unit and going and harvesting through the winter. Now, certainly, as the days get longer here and we get more... If you're growing in a place that gets more sunny days than Wisconsin does, we tend to have so many gray days in the winter. There's certainly some growing that's going to take place as well, with things like spinach and other hardy greens that folks are growing through the winter. But I kind of liken it to a big storage unit.
Yep.
There you go, Steve. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. John Hendrickson, our guest today with the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems. He's also the coordinator of the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. Our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here on this edition of Garden Talk, visiting with John Hendrickson. John's the coordinator of the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers, works out of the Center for Integrated Ag Systems at the UW-Madison. He's an outreach specialist there. And ready to answer your questions, or we always love to hear your experiences as well in the vegetable garden. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Clyde in Aiken, Minnesota, thank you for calling. Hello.
Yes, good morning. I happen to be traveling and guitar shopping, and I heard your program this morning, and I just had to call in. I'm 65 years old, and I was raised in about the same situation. We had about 2 acres worth of garden growing up as a kid, and my dad, before there was such a thing as a master gardener, I think my dad probably would have qualified. We had 2 greenhouses, and we started all our plants from seed. But what we did was we used turkey manure in the fall, and we plowed it under, and in spring we were ready to plant, and we put our plants far enough apart to where we tilled both directions. And we got to the point, Dad got it to the point to where the weeds would not even grow, and we watered from the lake. So we had all the nutrition, but here's what I want to tell you. Last year, the rain didn't cooperate. We live on the Mississippi River, and the rain didn't cooperate. We got too much rain, so I put a raised bed in, and I did everything wrong. Too much sand, not enough black dirt, and very little fertilizer. We started our plants from seed in peat pots, and we just threw them in the ground, peppers, tomatoes, cabbage, cucumbers, whatever, and I'll tell you what, we watered it, and that was it. I used a little 10-10-10, and we had more tomatoes and cabbage and peppers than you could imagine, and we did everything wrong.
Oh, that's a great story. What do you think, John? Did he do everything wrong?
Well, certainly if you're building raised beds, adding a lot of sand is not really recommended because of how, you know, the water just flushes out of sand so quickly. And if you've got a raised bed, that's going to leave your plants high and dry. So certainly adding more black dirt and organic material would be recommended. But it sounds like he's got plenty of energy and is going to go out there and grow lots no matter what.
Clyde, you got lots of energy. I can tell the garden knows that, the vegetables know that. They're going to grow for you.
and the comment about his father and the weed control is so true. What sounds like what happened was he was very, very good about staying on top of them. And if you stay on top of the weeds and prevent the weeds from going to seed, you know, you can end up with a situation where you have very little weeding to do, except for the stuff that, you know, comes in on the wind from the neighbors.
Yeah.
If I may, just quickly, my dad made scratchers from coat hangers, and we crawled on our hands and knees, and we dug them out on our hands and knees.
Wow.
With coat hangers.
Oh, man. Your dad sounds like you, though, a little bit there, Clyde, because he sounded like somebody that was a go-getter. My goodness.
I think you nailed it, Larry.
Thank you for calling. That's a great story. I appreciate it very much. We had Chuck in Green Bay sent us a note, either Facebook or maybe it was email, wondering what kind of a worm borer might have gotten into his carrots this year, and maybe what could he do to prevent it again.
In my experience, most of the damage on carrots is from fly larvae, and the flies lay their eggs, I believe, on the soil surface in the summertime, late summer, and then you start seeing that damage in your fall crop.
Mm-hmm.
I never really see that kind of damage in my spring crop at all. The carrot rust fly is one particular species that's problematic. You could put row cover on your carrots to prevent the flies from gaining access. But of course, if you've got the row cover on, it's a little bit more challenging to do the weeding and watering and things that you want to do. So a little bit of a trade-off. I've had years where it's a lot worse than others. 2 years ago, I had a lot of that damage on my carrots. Mm. This year, I'm seeing hardly any.
Okay. There you go. Let's go to, let's see, Polly in Round Lake Beach, Illinois. Hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Oh, I'm fine. Thanks. I'm not quite that of a go-getter. I was listening to you guys talk about the kale, you know, green things, and I want to sing the praises of Swiss chard. If there, mm-hmm. But it grows, it's easy to grow, at least down here. It's one of those things that goes, when it goes to seed, you'll get Swiss chard the next year, and I cover it sort of like I don't have it in a little greenhouse thing, but when it gets real cold, I just throw old sheets or whatever I've got over it and weight it down on either side so it doesn't blow away. And right now it's good. It's under snow, and I can go under there and pick more Swiss chard when I want it. It's wonderful.
It sounds great.
It's a great crop. Swiss chard is a wonderful crop. Easy to grow. Grows all season long. Multiple harvests.
Yep.
Very little pest
weather,
issues.
Like spinach.
Yep.
You know, spinach poops out, but the Swiss chard goes all summer. And my favorite recipe is use it like spinach in a souffle or in a stir fry with balsamic vinegar, and get that one on the web. That's wonderful.
Wow.
Onions, Swiss chard, little balsamic vinegar.
You're making me hungry.
Yeah, just the words balsamic vinegar.
Oh, well, that does wonders on other things, too, but that's cooking show stuff. So.
Yeah. Thank you, Polly.
Okay.
Appreciate the call. Swiss chard, she's right. It's a wonderful crop. Ken in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Ken.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for having the program. Between getting my first seed catalog yesterday and your show today, I'm making it through the winter.
All right.
Well, I have a question. My wife and daughter both like all kinds of peas, and I can't get them to germinate for nothing. I mean, I have okay success with the other things I grow, but I plant them in April, and I put this inoculant on them, but they just, nothing germinates, and I wonder if you could give me some tips.
Hmm. Do you all mean literally nothing?
One or two out of about 40 seeds that I plant.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a bad success rate. some things to suggest is the planting time, and making sure that you're not planting them too early when it's cold and wet, because you're gonna have rot. That's gonna prevent those seeds from germinating.
Okay.
You might try. I had some problems with the same thing. I was very frustrated getting inconsistent stands of peas. And it's like, you know, should I bother putting up a trellis when I've got a pea plant here and then the next one's, you know, way over here? And it's really frustrating to not have good success on pea germination. So I started planting more thickly so that I had, you know, a stronger stand. You may need to look at your planting depth if you're planting them too deep.
And what about dates here, Waukesha? So that's about the same as in Madison, I would think.
Yeah, you should be fine planting them in April.
Okay, well,
late April. Did you say April?
Yeah.
Yeah, mid-April, I guess it was, but I'll pay more attention next time.
Yeah, you may want to try a planting a couple weeks after that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Give it a try. Thanks, Ken. Thank you very much for calling. And we got Keith in Wausau. Hi, Keith.
Yeah, hi. I got a question regarding potatoes. I grow a lot of potatoes, and right about this time of the year, they start sprouting, and then they get soft. Do you have any ideas on how to prolong that process so we can enjoy the potatoes a little bit further into the springtime? I don't have a root cellar, so I'm looking for other ideas.
Potatoes.
Yeah, it's really all about the storage conditions, because, you know, if you don't have the right storage conditions, those potatoes think that it's time to start doing their thing. You know, the big commercial places use sprout inhibitors, but that's probably not going to be something you necessarily would want to do or invest in as a home gardener. So I guess I would look into trying to improve the storage conditions and getting the temperatures down and keeping it dark.
Is there some place in the basement where you can, you know, make it wall off a little area that you keep the heat out of, or most of it, and then keep it dark? That'd be a way to
right. Or if you wall off an area that is where there's a window well, you could use that window well with some dampers to bring cool air in from outside. If those are on a, you know, those would have to be thermostatically controlled. Otherwise, you don't want to freeze your potatoes.
Yeah, but that's actually worth. That's worth thinking about, too.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a couple of ideas, Keith. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Patty wonders if she could use her 2013 vegetable seeds, her leftover ones, in her 2014 garden. And why not, I'd guess. How long do seeds last?
Well, different vegetable seed has different shelf life. And, of course, the shelf life is going to be also dependent on how those seeds are being kept. If they were kept in an area with a lot of temperature and humidity fluctuations, chances are that those seeds, you know, a smaller percentage is going to be viable for the next year.
Mm-hmm. But you could give it a try, maybe overseed a little bit and see what happens. John Hendrickson, our guest today with the Center for Integrated Ag Systems, coordinates the School for Beginning Market Growers, and I hope you'll, if you're interested, maybe you're interested in learning more about how to become a market grower, go online to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We've got a direct link, or go to CIAS Grower Schools. Thanks for listening on Garden Talk. If you're like me, you start out a new growing season full of hope and anticipation. Sometimes the garden lives up to our expectations, and other times, let's just say that we spend more time trying to figure out what went wrong, maybe, than enjoying the bounty of the garden. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. John Hendrickson, my guest. John is the with the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems in the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. Outreach specialist for fresh market vegetables and food systems, and he coordinates the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. And John, thanks again for coming by to visit with us. Appreciate it.
Great to be here, Larry.
You can join in. Maybe you've got a gardening question, vegetable garden question, or maybe you've got an experience to share. Reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Joe and Pray to Sheen, we turn to you next. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Tom. Say, you've talked about your cherry tomatoes. I love them. I grow them all the time. I tried to extend my growing season a couple years ago. We have a house that faces south with a walkout. I have some patio doors to get sun. I built a small box, 2x4s, 8 foot by 8 foot, wrapped it in plastic, and put 3 barrels full of water, 55-gallon drums, on the backside, put all my tomato plants in there. And we had cherry tomatoes on into late February, early March. And it was wonderful. I'd walk into the room, and it would be 75, 78 degrees by the thermometer in a, you know, 45, 50-degree basement. And it worked quite well. I also realized that the evaporation from the barrels watered the room. I didn't have to water the plants all winter. It's a very simple way, if you have the room and the view of the sun that allows the heat to come in, to extend the growing season of these plants.
It sounds like a perfect setup, doesn't it, John?
It sounds like you should post a picture and send it to Larry for his Facebook page of your setup.
I just took 2x4s and screwed them together in an 8x8 frame, wrapped it in plastic, and each spring I disassemble it so we have a basement. But it works quite well.
It sounds like your house is on a hillside, and so the basement has a walkout to ground level?
Yeah. Okay. It's facing southeast, and we get sunlight in there, and it warms up every morning. And I assume the water barrels, you know, they add thermal mass.
Sure.
And it kept it warm, but they also evaporated. And I didn't water all winter. The soil was just nicely moist. It worked quite well.
Wow.
Finally, you know, in March, they kind of gave up. and you take it down, and, you know, in the fall, you just screw it back together and wrap the plastic around it again. It's a very easy way to extend, especially for tomatoes. It worked quite well.
Yeah, if you have that set up in your house,
because
I don't have a place in my house where I could do that.
Oh man, that is great, though.
So you've got that 8x8 frame set right up against the sliding glass doors.
Yeah, about a foot, well, about 18 inches back, so I can walk in front of it, and it gets plenty of solar insulants, and the barrels heat up. And the room literally stayed, I had a thermometer, it stayed 75, 77 degrees through the winter, even when it was, you know, below zero outside. It works quite, the thermal mass of the water is what I think is important to create enough heat in the room. But the evaporation also helps quite a bit and keep the room moist.
And what temperature do you keep that basement through the winter?
The basement's unheated, and it actually stayed around 48, 50 degrees maybe.
So yeah, about the soil
cool down there, but inside the room it was quite comfortable, and the plants loved it. We had tomatoes every night for salads on into, like, say, late February.
Maybe you need to make that bigger than 8x8 and move a couch in there so you can enjoy that 70-degree weather.
Boy, I guess so. That's wonderful. I'm thinking cherry tomatoes. I think it's more about cherry tomatoes in Disney at Epcot in Orlando. There's something called Living with the Land. It's where Disney does its research on vegetables and so forth. And they do a lot of interesting stuff, but they have tomato plants that will, I forget how many, 10,000 tomatoes, cherry tomatoes off of one plant. I mean, it's unbelievable. Number, if you've got the right growing conditions and you know how to take care of your cherry tomatoes, you can get that many.
Especially if you've got a long growing season.
Yeah, that's the whole point. I mean, it's in a greenhouse. They raise it, right. They have it all in a greenhouse. So, oh man, Judy in Long Lake, Illinois. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having your program. I just love it. I have a weird thing to tell you about my dogs. They get carrots for treats. You cut them up, and that's their little treat because it's not as fattening as some dog treats.
Yeah.
So they like carrots, okay? So this fall, we saw some carrot tops laying around in the grass. I'm thinking, my daughter said, oh, Mom must be out there pulling carrots. Well, the one day we saw what was happening. The two dogs were in the garden, and they were pulling the carrots out and taking them into the grass and only eating the carrot part.
Wow.
If we didn't see it, we would not have believed it.
Well,
that's a great story.
Smart dogs. They know something good when they see it.
They sure do. So that was the end of that. I went out and pulled the rest of my carrots.
Judy, thanks. That's a great story.
She paid the price for turning the carrots into a dog treat, though.
Yeah. But, you know, that's a great treat. Great treat. I mean, you know.
And now, she's not the first person I've heard. I've heard various stories about dogs and cats liking various vegetable products. It's always funny for me to hear that.
Yeah. Thanks again, Judy. You know, earlier we were talking about purple carrots, by the way, and we got a Facebook comment from Deb. I said, I bet you Jung's had purple carrots in their garden book. And Deb sent a Facebook note and said, Frank, yes, we did get seeds at Jung's last year for purple cosmic carrots. So purple cosmic they had last year. Probably, I'm sure, have it again this year. We have more callers online. Steve in Cumberland, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks.
What's on your mind?
Question. I got a question about some land that we have acquired in Cumberland up north. It has not been cultivated for many years and is really dense with tall grass. We'd like to start using it as a garden, but the rototiller doesn't cut through it. It's just really packed and kind of hard and covered with grass. Somebody recommended putting clear plastic sheets over it as a sun, as a way of controlling weeds in the early spring to prevent them from growing. And I guess you bake them instead of allowing them to grow. Does that work?
Yeah, it's a method called solarization, and it's been used successfully by any number of people over the years. And you could get You can get good advice about how to do that and anecdotes about how to do that online. Various garden forums online have lots of information about that. That's, assuming you're not doing a really huge area, that can be a very effective way to get an area ready.
Yeah, it's too big to do it by hand. You know, it's a couple acres, and we'd buy a big roll of clear plastic and just spread it out and try to just keep things down. I just wondered if
if you're thinking about doing a couple acres, I guess I would tend to look into trying to find a neighbor with some bigger equipment to go in there and tackle that initial weed removal, sod removal, and tillage work.
So, like somebody with a two-bottom plow or a three-bottom plow or something, and plow it up.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, plow it up the first time. Then you're going to be able to rototill.
Okay, that's a really good idea. Yeah. All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Thanks a lot for calling. And I'm sure there's somebody. Somebody in your area.
Maybe there's somebody listening right now.
Yeah, there may. Yeah. Steve's in the Cumberland area. Steve, you're going to have to advertise that on in the local paper. I did some of our PhD research in Cumberland, so I have a soft spot in my heart for Cumberland, Barron, and Neillsville. Those are the three communities where I did some of my PhD research. So Cumberland's a really great little town. I love it. We have Stephen Appleton next with a question. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I got a question for either you, Larry, or John about seeds starting for tomatoes, basically, or peppers, the heirloom or the hybrid.
Yeah.
If, do they ever combine them seeds together?
You mean, can you grow them in the same area?
Yeah, that. I guess basically for organics too, I try to get into the organic part.
Okay.
So the heirloom would be organic, right?
Well, not necessarily.
In
order for seed to be organic, it has to be produced on a certified organic seed farm. And so if you look in seed catalogs, and some seed catalogs don't offer any organic seed at all, but increasingly there are catalogs that do offer organically produced seeds. So if that's a priority for you, you can seek that out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then... even if you had heirloom varieties, you still need to do that. If you want to keep it organic, you'd still need to do the proper cultural things. Not use herbicides and so forth. Sure you understood that, Steve.
But the hybrid, that would be okay too, organic.
Well, certified organic farms are allowed to use hybrid seed.
Yeah.
Okay, then I'll just
The way the organic rule is written is that a certified organic farm is supposed to try to find all of their seed as organic seed.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, there are not all varieties are available as organic seed. And if you have a good enough reason to choose a particular variety that's not available in an organic form, then you can use that variety.
Hmm.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You know, we had early in the show a question about the small corn that you see in the, Chinese cooking or whatever, Oriental cooking, and wondering where that small corn came from. Jackie on Facebook sent us a note and said that small corn is called maize. Well, I think all corn is, that maize is a term for any corn, but it's very available in Europe because it can grow in shorter and cooler seasons. Probably came from South America, perhaps closer to the original genus of corn, which has been hybridized into the giant corn that we have today. So among the earlier, and probably came from South America. I wouldn't doubt that. That makes some sense. Thanks, Jackie, for that. We have Benita in Muscadet online. By the way, we have open lines. We can get you on pretty quickly with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. And Benita in Muscadet, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Two things. I'm growing the peas. I never could grow peas until I would plant them in April or as soon as the ground was thawed and covered them with a row cover. They germinated, and I have had peas for the last 3 years.
Oh.
And I let them get about 2 inches high before I pull the row covers off.
Good
with
advice.
Carrots, when I grow my carrots, I let them get about 5 inches high, and I load them down with eggshells as close to the plant as I can get it. I have had good carrots, big carrots, and straight carrots before I always had leggy carrots.
Hmm.
And I have done that with my parsnips as well, and I've had nice parsnips since I started putting the eggshells down.
Did you notice that improvement the very first year of putting the eggshells down?
Yes.
Hmm. Wow.
Yes. And to store my carrots, I pull them out of the ground. I brush as much of the dirt off as I can, stick them in Ziploc bags, leave the bag slightly open, and stick them in my refrigerator. And I was using carrots last year until April.
Yeah. That's a good way. I mean, you keep them cool. John, that makes sense to you?
Oh, yeah. Keeping them cool and keeping them moist is
yep,
important.
And I don't even wash the dirt off.
Carrots, most root crops want to be stored, actually, ideally, just above freezing, which is colder than most refrigerators.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Bonita. Appreciate your call. We have Stella in Sturgeon Bay next. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I was a little bit surprised. Two callers ago, the gentleman who called in about wanting to kill off vegetation.
The clear plastic? Yeah.
Right. And every time I've heard that procedure described in the past, it's always been black plastic in order to block the light, and black plastic will heat up hotter than clear plastic. So I was surprised that you didn't mention that, because I've heard it described on your program, you know, on quite a number of times.
Yeah, although I've had people lately, more recently, saying that the clear plastic actually works better than the black.
Okay.
And I'm not sure why.
Well, the clear plastic is going to let in more light, so it's going to get hotter under there. You're going to sterilize that soil and kill off weed seeds.
That's why. Okay. Yeah.
The black doesn't transmit more heat?
No, the clear does, apparently.
Well, because the clear is letting the light in, mm-hmm. and so you're having a greenhouse effect below that clear plastic.
Okay.
And whereas the black plastic is certainly going to make things warm, but it's not going to get as hot underneath there as with clear plastic.
Okay, and so the additional heat would offset the light providing mm-hmm. energy for photosynthesis?
I'm sorry,
If with clear plastic, the light coming through the plant, any plants that have sprouted are getting light for photosynthesis.
Yes, but if they're underneath that clear plastic that's held down tight to the ground, it's going to get so hot underneath there that they're going to get cooked.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, Stella, for calling. I'm glad she called, because I'm sure other people were wondering, well, why not black plastic, and that. It's good that you cleared that.
Well, there can be two different approaches. You can put down dark material. I mean, I've heard about people putting out, you know, pieces of old carpet and whatnot to kill off vegetation. I've never been a big fan of that because of the chemicals that you find in old carpet. But there's a smothering, you know, there's a smothering method and a solarization method.
And someone did mention, talking about smothering and that, the treated lumber. We talked about not using treated lumber. Jim wondered, he thought that treated lumber was no longer toxic, no longer contains arsenic compounds. Is this not the case? Well, I don't think it contains arsenic anymore, but certified organic, you cannot use or a treated lumber, can you?
That is correct, and that was basically the basis for my comment. And, you know, not everybody needs to be certified organic or not, but as a personal thing, I just... Would avoid a treated wood in a garden situation.
Jim on Facebook makes kale chips in the microwave. We talked about kale earlier. He sprays them with olive oil and a little salt, 3 to 4 minutes on high power. Learned early that if he did not remove the central vein of the kale leaf, he got pyrotechnics, a white sparkling flame that reminds him of magnesium combustion. See, that mineral has a similar mineral in it to magnesium, and that's probably why the carrot, the yellow carrot sparks occurred for another caller who was microwaving yellow carrots.
Sounds like we need to have a grad student project, somebody to sit around and cook vegetables in microwaves and figure this out.
Oh, man. Dwight in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello. I was wondering, have you heard anything about the use of electrolyzed water on fruits and vegetables as far as it kills any bacteria, salmonella, any type of bacteria or virus, and then it extends the shelf life of it? There's been tons of research done on it, and for local growers, I mean, they make these machines now where you can purchase them and produce the product yourself in a home base for around $300 and some for a machine, and it totally, like I said, it would eliminate salmonella problems that we have in the United States if they would use this process. And I just wonder if you heard anything about it.
I misunderstood. I didn't hear the word you said before, water.
It's electrolyzed water. It's basically soft water, electricity, and salt, and it turns it into you run this water through the system, and it produces a cleaner and a sanitizer. And the sanitizer will extend the lives of fruits and vegetables like up to 3-4 days. You can spray meat with it and put it in a fridge like a piece of fish, and it'll extend it like 4 or 5 days.
I'm not familiar with that particular process, but I do know that a lot of vegetable growers are starting to use various treatments for their water. Some of those are allowed for organic producers. There's some issues there. Peroxidic acid is one that growers are using to add to their wash water to sanitize things.
And thanks, Dwight, for calling. We got about a minute or so left here. John, I want to go back to the School for Beginning Market Growers, a chance for people who might be interested in starting their own market garden, right?
That's right.
They're going to learn all kinds of things.
Yes, they're going to get a huge shot in the arm in terms of marketing, field prep, fertility, irrigation, crop production, starting plants in the greenhouse, pests.
Wow. Are there
tools
any
and equipment?
Any spots left?
Oh, yeah. We still have some spots left.
And so to get signed up for this, you can go online to CIAS Growers Schools, right?
Growers Schools.
Growers Schools.
Is our Facebook page.
That's the Facebook page, CIAS Grower Schools. And that's the Facebook page. You can get signed up there and learn some more about it. Also, if you're on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, we've got a link to the page, so you can go from my Facebook page to the CIAS Grower Schools page as well. And, John, good luck with that, and thanks so much for being with us today. A lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Larry. Happy solstice, everyone.
Yeah, John Hendrickson with the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems and coordinator of the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. Great to have him along. Monday at 11, we have author and storyteller Jerry Apps to talk about his latest memoir, It's the Quiet Season, Remembering Country Winters. And then we'll talk with the author of The Annotated, A Christmas Carol. Thanks for listening. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.